Hey everybody, David Sims here from the Greenville Music History Podcast. This is episode 6, and it's going to be a slightly different format this time because we're introducing a new series called The Listening Room, where we invite different collectors to come in with their old records, and we're going to play about a dozen or so songs, about an hour, a little more than an hour, and listen to old music that's from the Greenville area, some just from the South Carolina area, but music that has a lot to do with Greenville's history and what people may have been listening to or influenced by back over the course of Greenville's history. So this time, in the first episode, Jack Hines, who you're going to meet in just a minute, and myself interview Hunter Holmes, who is an avid collector of 78s and other old recordings of blues music, hillbilly music, and country music from as far back as you can go. And Jack shares a dozen recordings with us, and it's a great conversation. And this, we didn't even know we were going to do this as a series, but this first one went so well that we decided to go ahead and start it off that way. And I think you'll enjoy it. It's a great way to just sit back and listen to some old recordings, hear some stories about them. So hope you enjoy it. And because this was kind of done for the first time, we have our introductions at the end. So here is Jack Hines to get us started.
All right. We're here with Hunter Holmes. Hunter's a collector of rare pre-war 78s, a lover and historian of hillbilly music, and a decent picker in his own right. He's been compiling, documenting this stuff for years, and he's brought us some selections from the upstate and from upstate adjacent performers. He's done a lot of work documenting music from his own hometown of Lawrence, South Carolina as well. So he's going to play some pre-war 78s for us from South Carolina and some Lawrence County focused stuff from throughout the 20th century.
All right. Well, welcome. What are we looking at here?
So this first one is not it's chronologically, as far as being recorded, is not the earliest record I brought, but kind of stylistically. Frank and James McCravey were from a pretty prominent, wealthy family in Lawrence proper. Their dad was the sheriff of Lawrence County for a time around the turn of the century, and lived on West Main Street, involved in civic organizations. And if you go through the Lawrence County newspaper, it's got tons of stuff like the McCravey boys play for the Rotary Club or the whatever, you know. Right. And then I think like 1924 or 25, I can't recall the exact year without my book in front of me, the news switches to McCravey boys make good in New York City on records and stuff. And they just became wildly popular with maybe all walks of life, certainly a genteel form of down-home music. You'll hear on the record, this is not like hard-driving fiddle music, but they kind of parlor old-time is what I refer to it as, really tight brother harmony, which is important in the story of hillbilly music because brother harmonies became such a huge part of the 1930s and 40s, and then with people like the Blue Sky Boys and the Delmore Brothers. And then just eventually on into bluegrass harmony. But so Frank and James McCravey are they're pretty important, and they're super unappreciated, especially in the 78 community, because they're not red hot. They're not, like I said, scorching fiddle band, you know.
Right.
So, but, you know, there's a place for this, especially in the context of the bigger picture. This is one of their recordings of Will the Circle Be Unbroken. They recorded dozens, if not over 100 sides between the mid-20s through the early 30s. And they recorded this before the Carter family recorded their version, which kind of turned into a standard.
Yep, sure.
Will the Circle Be Unbroken. And it's a fairly different piece of music than the Carter family's melody. But with that being said, we'll just let it play, huh?
Whose dear forms you often miss when When you close your earthly story, will you join them in their bliss? Will the circle be unbroken by and by and by? Is a better home awaiting in the sky, in the sky? You can picture happy gatherings round the fireside long ago, and you think of cheerful partings when they left you here below. Will the circle be unbroken by and by, by and by? Is a better home awaiting in the sky, in the sky? One by one their seats were emptied, one by one they went away. Now your circle has been broken, will it be complete one day? Will the circle be unbroken by and by and by? Is a better home awaiting in the sky, in the sky? Is a better home awaiting in the sky, in the sky?
Their influence is kind of completely undocumented and unappreciated, like I said, but then they moved back to Lawrence and ran the music store right on the square for the rest of their lives. You know?
Wow.
But so I would argue probably sold more records than these other hillbilly artists that there have been entire PBS documentaries about. You know, right. Not the Carter family or Jimmy Rogers, but the McCraveys probably sold more records than Charlie Poole or some of these other Mount Rushmore type figures.
Right. And it definitely sounds like a more, like you said, genteel version of the Carter family.
Yeah, it's
family.
Pretty safe. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Very safe.
There's not an edge on it, which is fine.
Yeah, yeah.
So the next one I'll play, all these are South Carolina artists, so I don't feel like I need to say that, but this is a brother duet from Union County. This was recorded 27, I think, maybe, but don't quote me on the years. I didn't bring my Tony Russell discography with me, but these guys, totally different sound, maybe not from the highest social echelons, like a little more down home. Interviewed the family of these guys pretty extensively 10 or 15 years ago. But their names are the Stapleton brothers, and at this moment I can't recall the brothers' names individually. But you'll hear, how that blood harmony, whatever you want to call it,
right,
sounds in a completely different way.
All right.
little less trained, maybe.
In a cool shade in the bar, by the side of a brook, two sweet maidens were fishing one day. They talked as they fished, and the younger girl weeped, for sweetheart she never knew. Then the older girl said, by the cross of her head, cheer up, you've no cause to feel blue. Your love you've not met, he'll come to you yet, for somebody's waiting for you. Somebody is waiting for you, you, you. Somewhere somebody is longing, heart is true. Sometimes you love somebody who loves you too. Somewhere somebody is waiting for you. Come join in the chorus that's been sung. Oh yes, it is true, someone's waiting for you. I wish that you thought I was one. She paused for a while and said with a smile, I don't know, but maybe it is true. But if I am wrong, you won't very long, for somebody's waiting for you. Somewhere somebody is waiting for you.
Great.
It's a totally different brand, right?
Yeah. I'd like to hear Chris Stapleton whistle like that.
Oh, yeah, right. The Mason Stapleton, I thought of it while that was playing, was kind of the leader of that band. And pretty interesting story that the Union County, South Carolina, is oddly well-documented in comparison to surrounding counties. Greenville and Spartanburg included, as far as hillbilly and blues records go. And it's all because of this guy who was a local furniture store salesman who turned into, because that's where you bought records, was at a funeral store, furniture store.
Oh.
Because that's, the records were just a way to make you buy a big, expensive Victrola. Which right. At the time, I mean, some of the Victor model Victrolas cost more than a Model T, mm-hmm. You know.
That's right.
But he became a talent scout and took all these kind of Union County would have been nobodies to make records in Atlanta and Charlotte. And this is an Atlanta recording. They were just taking these guys' word, like, if you guys come record, I can fill the studio with hillbillies and blues musicians, mm-hmm. or jazz bands.
Yeah.
And then we can sell our little regional artists. And you sell them nationally, too, but I guarantee you we'll sell them. And that's kind of the... That's how it all really started, you know.
Because mm-hmm. those players were furniture.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that was, you know, if you didn't have a music purveyor in town, it was the furniture people.
Yeah.
Totally makes sense.
Just like a TV was furniture back then, you know. Remember my grandma's TV was you know, bigger than this table.
That's right.
Wooden cabinet. So this only one half of this record is South Carolinian. But again, sort of like the McCravies, except better documented, these guys... influence is so far-reaching in the realm of country music. This is by Darby and Tarleton. Jimmy Tarleton was born in Darlington County, and at some point traveled west, maybe for the World's Fair, that big Hawaiian exposition that was happening on the West Coast, same time that surfing was introduced to the United States.
Oh, right.
Well, the California version of the United States. But Jimmy Tarleton learned how to play Hawaiian guitar from an Italian Hawaiian named Frank Ferreira, who was also a huge selling recording artist on Hawaiian records from the acoustic era. Jimmy Tarleton learns this, comes back east, and teaches, records his own records with Tom Darby, but also teaches other South Carolinians how to play Hawaiian guitar. And it's the first recording on a hillbilly record of somebody playing a slide guitar. And that's the thing that you can't really describe his influence, because steel guitar is synonymous with almost every brand of country music, whether you're talking about a dobro and bluegrass or
pedal steel
and all that, straight steel on all those Hank Williams records. Jimmy Tarleton is a number one. He's the first guy that hillbillies bought this hillbilly record like, well, that sounds like something, you know. That's a Hawaiian guitar, you know. And the, just like, boom. I mean, it's on every record after that. Not every record, but
a lot of them.
So this is their big first hit, Columbus Stockade Blues, which turned into a huge standard with bluegrass and folk, Woody Guthrie, all these kind of people. Everybody knew this song.
What year is it?
Columbus Stockade Blues, I think, is 26.
Okay.
Electrically recorded.
Thank you.
What is that newfangled cosmopolitan sounding instrument?
On? Yeah, I gotta get me one of those Hawaiian guitars.
It's amazing.
But it's really what happened, though. I mean, yeah. that record. I don't know the sales figures on it, but this record by Darby and Tarleton, I mean, it's in every stack of Hillbilly records you look through from the every. If you can find a Victrola that's never been parted out, and if they were a Hillbilly music family, that record 90% of the time is in there.
Wow.
They apparently just were always at each other's throats, though. I think Darby, if I'm not mistaken, the beginning of their on-record beef is Darby talked Tarleton out of a royalty deal with Columbia for both of them. So not to his gain, but he was like, they'll pay us whatever, $200 if we record today,
right?
Or 10 cents on every record or whatever, figure. And, you know, history shows, like, the sales on this record, they would have been millionaires.
Yeah.
But they were, you know, died in obscurity, you know. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Tarleton, they were both lived to be older, and Jimmy Tarleton was recorded again during the folk revival and played Newport, you know, in 66 or whatever, all these, you know, festival scene. So, if y'all don't mind, I'll play another Jimmy Tarleton record.
Sure.
Is that all right?
Sure, go ahead.
Just to show you the two sides of this guy.
Now, where exactly was he from?
Again? He was from Darlington.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hartsville.
Yeah.
Bishopsville. Yeah.
And it's just interesting because stylistically you'd think, oh, this is just a white guy mimicking what he's hearing blues guys do on bottleneck guitar. And you'll hear in this record, that's true. But he just learned it from a straight up Hawaiian guitar player. So
right.
he's just this cool missing link kind of figure.
Yeah.
A fork in the road.
Now, was somebody like Sol Hopi famous and popular? I don't know what.
Yeah.
I know he sold a lot of records, but I don't know exactly when.
Yeah, the 30s. 30s and maybe 40s too. Sol Hopi would have been, he's huge. But for people like these guys, I'm sure they listened to those. There was another guy that maybe would have been a little more current with some of this stuff named King Benny Nuahi,
mm-hmm.
which had this just insanely hot band at any given time recording. He could play it all, these virtuoso ukulele performances in a Hawaiian steel guitar. But this just shows a different side of Jimmy Tarleton. Tom Darby is also on this record, but it's very obvious which records are Tarleton leads and Darby
right.
leads. So this is called Heavy Hearted Blues, and he is awful blue.
Jailkeeper, won't you give me my good man back, you see. But the jailkeeper loves you, sweet mama. got a pretty woman, but you managed to do your last goodbye. I'd rather be a sailor way out on the deep sea. I'd rather be some sailor way out on the deep sea than be a married man way down in Georgia where the baby said no on my knee. A man sees trouble and a single man sees none. I'd rather be a single man, be all single, and live all by myself.
All right.
That's great.
There's the bluer side of Jimmy Tarleton.
Well, I love the approach to structure, because there almost is no structure. You know, I mean, he goes to the five chord like twice or three times or something. And even in the previous song that we heard, when he went to the five chord, sometimes he didn't do all of it. He kept the drone of the one going. So it has this ethereal kind of weird quality to it. But there's something about, and you know, you see other blues musicians do this and folk musicians do it, where they do that approach where it's almost like the verse is as long as it needs to be until I resolve it. And Bob Dylan did that. I mean, you know, and it's a fascinating approach to structure, because we usually think of structure as such a rigid thing nowadays.
It's, you know, I kind of try, I aspire to approach music the same way Jimmy Tarleton does.
There's a lot of freedom in it, you know?
He's got it, and you know, it happens when it needs to happen.
Yep.
Since you mentioned Bob Dylan, we'll play another guy. I could go up the Jimmy Tarleton diaspora. We could do that for the entire 2 hours. Because it's just a big picture. The Dixon brothers and all these South Carolinians fall into it. But this guy, you know, bringing a little closer to Greenville, Chris Bouchillon, another locally a nobody. Like, there's no Chris Bouchillon statue, right? You know? But when people hear this, they've heard it before on a Bob Dylan record.
Or Guthrie.
Yeah, or Woody, and Bob learned it from Woody,
right? That's
right. I say this like I know these people. But, One of my greatest, I don't know, just, it was an awesome moment that happened. I was looking for records, called this guy who's kind of a local Wheeler dealer that Joe Shirley has had experience with. And his wife, he's not from here, but his wife is. And I was looking through their 78s and buying some, and they asked me to play guitar, and I played a little, and I didn't play a Chris Bouchillon record. I mean, I performed one of his songs, but the lady said, "Wow, you got that really old sound. You remind me of my uncle Chris Bouchillon." And I was like, "What?"
Oh,
you know.
My God.
And there were Chris Bouchillon records in the stack that I was buying from them.
Wow.
So he's an interesting character. His first records are under the name the Greenville Trio, and it's him and two brothers.
Right.
And then this, he kind of got, not pigeonholed, but they found what worked for Chris Bouchillon were these talking performances.
Because he wasn't that great of a singer, right?
Isn't right.
The story?
That's the story, is that they were like, why don't you try talking instead of singing? You know, he did record some where he sings. There's one called Let It Alone. And he doesn't sound like Frank and James McCravey.
Right.
But he's no worse than any of these other guys,
sure,
you know.
Right.
So I suppose there's probably a fairly good chance that he had heard this style being performed at medicine shows by black performers. So this, in its lyrics and its delivery, his cadence and stuff, is almost identical to songs that Pink Anderson of Spartanburg recorded later in the 60s after being rediscovered. Also a veteran medicine show performer. So I don't know if Chris learned it from Pink or if Pink learned it from Chris Bouchillon records, but whatever the case is, I'm glad it exists.
And there are a lot of people who credit Bouchelon with inventing the talking blues style.
Well, he's certainly the number one pollinator. I mean, he might not have invented it. That, I mean, only Chris knows where he learned or developed that, I suppose. But nobody recorded it like him at that time. And again, with some of these others, the records were really popular with black and white audiences, and the spread is just immeasurable. So this you'll hear sung from a black perspective, because he's saying, I've got a gal that works for the white people or whatever, but not overly minstrelly. Like, I think Chris has got a pretty good touch at it's clear where his inspiration comes from, but he's not, you know, he's not a minstrel. He's not in blackface. Right. He's just singing the kind of music he likes.
So. Right.
I went down in Georgia to the county fair. The birds and the monkeys and the lions were there. The lion broke loose and started through the crowd, and I couldn't help from holler out loud. I felt runnish. Tore my britches on a barbed wire fence. I went down in Florida to get rich quick. I bought me a lot and a load of brick. I got scared of the snakes and the alligators, so I decided to come back later. I don't like snakes. I'd rather die poor than live a long time. I took me a wife about 5 years ago. We got one kid, he's just about four. He gets up at the table and he slaps his maw, rubs lashes in my hair and say, ain't you my paw? Runs string beans up my nose, sticks potatoes in my ears, rubs mustard in my eyes. Mama's in the pantry preparing to eat. Sister's in the kitchen and fixing for the feast. Papa's in the cellar and mixing up the hops. Brother's at the window and watching for the cops. Drinking homebrew. It makes you drunk if you don't bust. Up in the mountain at a liquor still, back in the mountain in the Blue Ridge Hill. I like the still and I like its juice, but I didn't like the cops who cut us loose. I jumped valleys, run over speed cops, dodge cannonballs. Standing in the corner by the white folks' yard, up in the corner by a bucket of lard, I greased my feet a little hog-eye lard, went slipping up and down the white folks' yard, a-hunting the cook. She gives me lashes, clabber and cornbread. There ain't no use me working so much. I got a gal that brings me the mush. She works for the white folks down in Caroline. She bring me everything from lashes to wine, a homebrew, chitlin', corn whiskey. I went possum hunting the other night. It is awful dark and I lost my light. The dog treed something way down in a flat. We thought it was a possum, but it must have been a cat. I lost my job. My wife run me off. Had to bury my clothes. There ain't no use me working so hard. I got a gal in the white folks' yard. When she killed the turkey, she saved me the wing. She thinks I'm a working, but I ain't doing a thing. Loafing the street, having a good time, looking at the flappers.
You know, it's funny. I think that, you know, the Beverly Hillbillies theme is almost a recreation of this song in terms of the syntax of it, like how each verse, you know, ends in a strange place and all that, and the talking style of it. It's pretty amazing.
Well, you know, Woody Guthrie, you hear his talking blues, and then hear Bob Dylan's. They kind of talk like they're one and the same. Their delivery is so, I mean, it's that record, you know, and Chris Bouchelon recorded more than, this is the new talking blues, and he recorded, you know, I don't, two dozen maybe.
And how ubiquitous would he have been back in those days, especially across the country? I mean, would people have his records?
Great record sales,
Yeah.
Wildly influential South Carolinian from the upstate, Greenville-centric. that gets no love around here. I'm quite sure Bob Dylan knows where he got it, right? I mean, yeah. He knows music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if he comes to play the Peace Center somewhere, there's nothing for him to see that says Chris yeah. Bouchelon was
yeah.
from here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Killer guitar on all those records. He's yeah. not playing guitar. That's his brother, Uris. I believe is how you pronounce that name. But just if that was just a guitar solo, I'd listen to the whole record.
Oh, it's incredible.
You know,
yeah.
finger picking.
Yep.
So this is jumping tracks a little bit. This is 1928. This is, let's see which side we'll play. This is a guy that I feel quite sure would have crossed paths with Chris Bouchelon, or a duo. This is Blind Simmy Dooley and Pink Anderson. So Simmy Dooley was from Elberton, Georgia, but kind of took young Pink Anderson under his wing and taught him the medicine show, the ropes. I mean, the whole thing, that the repertoire, the jokes, the lifestyle, all that. So, and in return, I guess, like so many blues recording artists, Pink was his, you know, his eyes on the road. So, because yeah. Pink had vision. So, born in 1900 in Lawrence, South Carolina, mostly associated with Spartanburg, because that's where he was living upon rediscovery and when he died. His roots, as well as his musical roots, are from Lawrence. He recorded one song with slide guitar in the 60s and told Sam Charters that that's the first song he had learned. John Henry and his uncle in Lawrence, a guy named John Wick, taught it to him. Hmm. So, or maybe Joe Wick. Is John Wick the movie?
Yeah, John Keanu Wick. Reeves?
Yeah, Joe Wick. Keanu Reeves taught him how to play. No, but this is... this is Papa's About to Get Mad, and this is Pink singing the lead on this, and Simmy Dooley chiming in with his little banter. So a little bit less audio quality than some of the others, but pre-war blues records are expensive in any condition. So this is just what we get here.
Away. What she said, boy? What she said, I'm leaving town. If I had a thought it once and asked her to stay,
then what?
She might have settled down. See, I am feeling awful lonesome and blue.
When?
Since my baby went away. I sat down and wrote her little letter today.
Then what, boy?
In these are the words I said.
What did you say?
I said, sweet mama, mama. Papa,
about to get mad.
I know the sweetest peaches don't grow on trees. Sweetest honey don't come from bees. But I'm getting tired of listening at your correction. You better go find yourself some good protection.
A sweet mama, mama.
Papa, about to get mad. I didn't know that I could get some dog on me. I mean, for me. Been flirting with the butcher, flirting with the baker, but now, mama, you're flirting with the undertaker.
A sweet mama, mama,
papa,
about to get mad.
I didn't know that I could get so doggone tired. I mean, so tired. You gon' keep on messing around, honey, until you get my goat.
What are you gonna do?
Remember, I got a raise and you got a great big old throat.
A sweet mama, mama. I'm
a about to get mad. Rooster was hanging around the kitchen one day.
What did that rooster say, boy?
What did that old cook say? I am gonna kill that speckled hen before long.
Why, boy?
Because she will not lay. But I believe I will wait until tomorrow. Then maybe she might lay. That old rooster, he been running with some tails in his eyes.
Then what?
To that old hen, he didn't say.
I wonder what he said.
Or he said, sweet, I mean mama, mama. The cookie is about to get mad. I didn't know him. I could see if the dog was blue. That old rooster, he said, you better run and lay an egg, mama. He said, this ain't no joke. That cook has got a great big axe that will fit your throat.
A sweet mama,
mama, cookies probably get mad.
Think about the good time round the old boneyard. Eat one pan, I mean eat one pan. Say you better run to the hen house and lay an egg in the hay.
Why, boy?
I would lay one for you, mama, but I ain't built that away.
Must be, mama, mama, the cookies done gone mad.
I love that record.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Who's playing guitar?
That's Pink and Simi are both on that.
They're
Pink,
both
of them playing guitar. And there's a couple, they recorded four sides at this session in Atlanta, and a couple others that maybe highlight the guitar play and the way they would have sounded on any given night, bouncing off of each other, finger picking, just primo Piedmont blues technique. But that one is just, that side specifically, I just think it's so fun.
It is great.
Not condoning domestic violence by any means, right. But just again, that, like all those medicine show guys, Pink Anderson, Chris Bouchelon, their delivery is just perfect.
Yep.
The humor and their timing, it's like stand-up comedy.
And it's great to hear a surprise chord in there that you don't expect.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like every now and again, and
that
some
minor,
of that, and some
minor
of that stuff comes from like, I mean, vaudeville and music hall performances from England too. I mean, a lot of their progressions were more sophisticated.
Yeah.
But they came over and minstrel shows and stuff too. So that's pretty remarkable.
So that's funny that you say that. this is flowing right along. Sort of like the McCravies, this guy, insanely sold even better than the McCravies, Vernon Dalhart, huge hillbilly recording artist, but totally like a music hall guy. He's from Texas, but highbrow hillbilly music, and recorded these a lot of disaster songs and murder ballads and topical pieces. But his musical partner, and maybe I'm not sure if it's ever been documented whether they were romantically involved, but it was a lady named Adeline Hood, who was from South Carolina.
Okay.
And these records just sold really well. Like, you know, Uncle Dave Macon, who's this huge hillbilly recording artist, he loved Vernon Dalhart records. But now ask a young person playing Uncle Dave Macon records, do you like Vernon Dalhart? And it's just like, oh, it's the worst. Like one of our kind of, I don't know, cultural leaders or whatever, is this guy, Joe Bassard, this legendary 78 collector, and he calls him Vernon Stale Fart. And his attitude with all those other first generation 78 collectors is, you know, carried on. But anyway, you talk about the music hall chord progression.
Yeah.
I got a note on this to how to make it track properly. It's Uptown. Huh. And Adeline Hood, the lady from South Carolina, she gets wound up on this.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun.
What year are we looking at here?
This is probably, this is very late 20s, early 30s.
Okay.
And I apologize, there's a bass saxophone on this record that just blows the grooves out. Like that.
Really?
The signal that thing was putting out, steel needles on phonographs were not able to cope with those really loud lows.
Yeah.
So there is some blasting on this.
Okay.
And we might have a tracking issue. If we do, we'll just scratch this whole thing.
Yeah,
but
fine.
If it works, it's worth it.
To his children, if weary come to me, I looked up to his heaven, and there a sign I see. I work so hard, I'm wishing that I never had been born. That's why you'll find me waiting when Gable blows his horn.
Born, morning,
yes, sir.
I'm going to be free. Born, morning, your future will be all naughty.
Hallelujah, there's a rainbow in the sky. Hallelujah, redemption damn nigh.
Now sing it, brother, sing it, and let your voice be heard.
Yes, sing in the low voice, sing in the middle voice, sister, sing it well, fly. Oh,
hallelujah, there's a rainbow in the sky.
Hallelujah, it's there for you and I.
Now look up, brother, look up.
Yes, look up, sister, we're power. Hallelujah, there's a rainbow in the sky. Yes, look up, sister, we're a pile. Oh, hallelujah, there's a rainbow in the sky. Won't have to tote no cotton, won't have to tote no corn, won't have no alarm clock, but awake me in the morn. On this earth I done poorly, was always way behind, but in the rush for heaven, I'll be the first in line. Hallelujah, that's a rainbow in the sky. Hallelujah, redemption day am nigh.
Now sing it, brother, sing it, and let your voice be heard.
Yes, sing in the low voice, sing in the middle voice, sister, sing it real power. For you and I.
Now look up, brother, look up.
Yes, look up, sister, we're high. Oh, hallelujah, there's a rainbow in the sky.
Yeah, so this next one, Earl McCoy, Alfred Ming, and Clem Garner.
Okay.
They're all between the ages of like 14 and 16 when this is made. Also a result of that Union County salesman that took the Stapleton brothers that we talked about earlier, Byram Lawson, took these guys to make this record in Atlanta. And Earl McCoy is on, I don't know, he's probably on about 7 or 8 records from this time period. The other two, I don't know that they recorded again. But this is their take on John Henry, the Steel Driving Man, and really hot. I mean, to say it's punk rock is obviously not the right thing, but they're a garage band. They're teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and their attack is like Slash and Burn. And I just love their attitude on this record.
I mean, what year would this have been?
This is like maybe 30, 31.
Okay.
It's 15622, which the numbers obviously get higher as the time goes on.
Sure.
Columbia Hillbilly Records start at 15,000.
Steel driving man, Lord, Lord, man, I'm gonna be a steel driving man. drill down. John Henry was driving on the right hand side, Steve Drill driving on the left. Before I let you beat me down, I'll hammer my boots every day, Lord, Lord, I'll hammer my boots every day.
Awesome. Yeah, McCoy, Ming, and Garner.
It almost sounded like that slide had a, I could hear a lower and a higher octave to what he was playing. Was that on a dobro? Or
no, I think it's probably just a square neck Hawaiian guitar or a round neck with a nut extension. It might have been a National, like a metal body National.
Yeah.
This is pre-dobro. I mean, I guess the dobro, they were like developing that,
yeah,
the
sure.
Doppiero, but more likely if it's a resophonic instrument, being National at that time period.
Hmm.
So, all right. So I think it's clear Jimmy Charlton's influence on that record,
right.
Who we started or was at the beginning of the show. And then further down that stream, this is from 1936. This is Dorsey and Howard Dixon, also from Darlington County, but moved around like a lot of cotton mill families and spent a long time, or relatively speaking, in Greenville working, their family working for the Dunneen Mill.
Okay.
And I don't know that Howard or Dorsey Dixon ever worked in the mill. They might have been a little too young, but their older sister worked at Dunneen and as child labor. And then they both worked in cotton mills their entire lives, but I think that was after they had moved on to East Rockingham, North Carolina.
Okay.
But this is one of their songs about cotton mill life, which are probably the ones they're most known for. And two brothers, Dorsey Dixon singing lead and playing standard guitar. Howard Dixon, his younger brother, playing Hawaiian guitar, learned directly from Jimmy Charlton, and singing harmony.
About the old standing room, Mama gonna tell a tale. You have to keep your hands up and brush you off the rail. Take your roller, swing your lap sticks and run out your guides. If you don't, I'll put another center on your side. Say, wait a minute, fella, now tell me where you're going. Don't you hear the doggone spinning room roar? Shake, sweet lord, I'm on the scout. Get back on the job, you ain't gonna slip out. Soapy water standing in the middle of the floor. The scrubbers lay the broom down, they're gonna get more. You better make them mad and have a running fit. But you better look out, or your foot might slip. Say, wait a minute, fella, now tell me where you're going. Don't you hear the doggone spinning room roaring? Can't fool me, cause I'm on the scout. Get back on the job, you ain't gonna slip out. Thank you. dope, grab a dope boxes, here they go. They're always in a hurry, cause they can't go slow, running up and down the alley like some wild coon, flinging them to bobbing all over the room. Say, wait a minute, fella, now tell me where you're going. Think you're cold, going spinning room and roaring. You can't fool me, cause I'm on the scout. Get back on the job, you ain't gonna slip out. I'm a factory feller and I work in the mill. I have to keep at it cause I live on the hill. Ain't got no clothes, ain't got no shoes, ain't got nothing but the spinning room blues. Say, mate, any fella, now tell me where you're going. Don't you hear the dogs on the spinning room roaring? You can't fool me cause I'm on a scout. Get back on the job, you ain't gonna slip out.
It was at this point in the conversation that we realized that Hunter had a Josh White recording, one of the old ones. And of course, Josh was the very first subject of the History Podcast.
Yeah, Josh White's great. I've got one of his records here I brought.
Which one do you have?
Jesus Gonna Make Up My Dying Bed and Blood Red River.
Sure.
You want to hear that?
Sure. Whichever one of those cuts you think is the best?
Jesus Gonna Make Up My Dying Bed is... It's got killer guitar, but sort of like that bass saxophone.
Yeah, it burns it out a little bit.
Just blasts. So Blood River is kind of a Piedmont standard, so we'll do that one.
All right.
And obviously, I mean, y'all know the deal with Josh White. Just prime example of fine guitar playing. Yeah. And great singer, too.
On the Conqueror label?
Conqueror. Hmm. Yeah, so this was ARC, American Record Company. Yeah. Had these tons of little subsidiary labels, so they would have recorded this by Josh White, and Conqueror might have been only sold in Crest dime stores, and some other Romeo might have only been sold in, you know,
Montgomery
Sears
Ward or
whatever, right?
Yeah.
Montgomery Ward had its own record label.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So it's funny that the whole like dime store record thing is its own book.
And what year is this one? I can't remember.
That's a good question. I'm not as well versed on 34, maybe.
Yeah, he recorded this song several times in his career.
Away to that blood red river run from my back window to the rising sun. Oh, I love her, Lord, I love her. Tell this whole wide world I do. But the way you mistreat me is coming back home to you. Won't you tell me what to do? Whatever it is I can be. Oh, I love her, Lord, I love her. But she treats me so unkind. Oh, she keeps me worried and bothered all the time. Which way,
do that blood red river run from my back window to the rising sun. Going to sing these blues, and I ain't gonna sing no more, 'cause a woman I love, Lord, she drove me from her door. Watch your way, do that blood red river run from my back window to the rising sun.
He's such a good guitarist.
That ending is so good.
Such, and that's before he injured his hand, right? Then he had to kind of reinvent the way he
played. I don't know. Bit, yeah, it must be.
He was a lot more colorful back then in the early days. Because that's right after he was the singing Christian
right.
for a while, and then he came back to Greenville and changed a little bit.
Another, so you're talking about some stuff that would have sounded like Greenville.
Mm-hmm. Or what would have been popular.
Yeah. These guys... This is a duo, half South Carolinian duo from North and South Carolina. But I was telling Jack about this guy. Mac Woolbright was a banjo player from, born in Union County, South Carolina, and lived in Gaffney for a long time. But a big thing that I'm kind of been barking about for years is we've got our own musical legacy here. So coming up playing bluegrass and old time and pre-war blues styles, when I first got into it, I thought, you know, bluegrass is mountain music. You know, you have to go up into the hollers to hear the real stuff, or that's where it at least came from.
Yeah.
And on the other side of the same coin, blues music, you've got to go way west, go to Memphis, and then drive south,
right,
down into the Mississippi Delta. And this is before, I mean, I'm not old by any means, but it was before everything was on the internet, you know,
sure.
So I was, what books I could find at the library and stuff. And through record collecting and doing my own research, I've realized that we just have this insanely vast musical legacy and heritage that is oftentimes what influenced the thing that became the bigger picture, you know. So you've got, you know, bluegrass music, kind of the figurehead of that whole thing. Bill Monroe, on one hand, as a band leader and stuff, but stylistically, the driving force is the bluegrass banjo. Earl Scruggs, right. He brings it all back to Shelby, North Carolina, which is the Piedmont. It's not the mountains.
Right.
It's not below the state line, so we can't claim him, but it's not far off. And he cited this guy, Mac Woolbright, as one of his earliest kind of like mind-blowing realizations, which is, I don't have to play clawhammer like all these other people around me, the earlier banjo style. I can finger pick. And so this is Mac Woolbright and Charlie Parker, not the jazz, not the jazz Charlie Parker. But... singing and playing, and you can hear, I mean, it's not straight up, it's not a Clinch Mountain Breakdown or whatever, but it's
right.
It's an early iteration of what would become Earl Scruggs style by South Carolinian.
Right.
Gets up early in the morning, leaves his wife in bed. She lies there, the kids wakes up and cry, get up and cook some bread. Let me tell you a thing or two that a woman like that will never do. And the man that wrote the home sweet home, he never would have married man. He never had no loving wife to beat him with a frying pan. She'll meet you at the door when you're gonna come in. She'll knock you down with a rolling pin. And the man that wrote the home sweet home, he never would have married man. Mm-hmm.
man comes in at dinner time hungry and he wants to eat. By the wife piled up in the bed lying there sound asleep. Guess the man did it, pulled his hat, swear and declared that he won't stay there. And the man that wrote the home sweet home, he never was a married man. He never had no loving wife to greet him with a frying pan. She'll meet you at the door when you're gonna come in. She'll knock you down with a rolling pin. And the man that wrote home sweet home, he never was a married man. Man comes in from work at night tired and he goes to bed. The baby lying there in the cradle screaming like we'll wake the dead. He'll sit and rock for about an hour, every hand to every power. And the man that wrote home sweet home, he never was a married man. He never had no loving wife to greet him with a frying pan. She'll meet you at the door when you're gonna come in. She'll knock you down with a rolling pin. And the man that wrote home, sweet home, he never was a married man. The man that wrote home, sweet home, never was a married man. He never had no loving wife to greet him with a frying pan. She'll meet you at the door when you're gonna come in. She'll knock you down with a rolling pin. And the man that wrote home, sweet home, never was a married man.
I noticed there's not an upright on there or anything. Is that was just that duo or was that...
Just a duo, yeah.
Yeah.
This is kind of before... I mean, there were other bands playing the Gid Tenor and the Skilt Lickers type Atlanta big fiddle bands. Mm-hmm. None of those actually have an upright bass,
really?
Though. The bass didn't really enter hillbilly music and then bluegrass until maybe Western swing, kind of
really?
Like mid to late 30s.
Oh, wow.
And then
okay.
It starts showing up in like Roy Acuff, you know, bands
gotcha.
And stuff. So, yeah, I mean, Mack Woolbright... another person who's this super vital link in a chain.
Right.
But died in poverty, you know, obscure. Never got the love from, like, the folk revival crowd never quite got to him, you know.
Right.
Didn't get to play on any Birds records or anything.
No,
like
right,
that.
Right, right, right.
So, and then another kind of further on down that path... and with more Greenville ties is this is another song about marital bliss, just like the last one, the Married Life Blues. This is Byron Parker and his Mountaineers, which had an engagement on WFBC for a while around the same time period as that book that we're talking about, a scrapbook I have here with me. The two musicians, they're all great. Byron Parker was not from here, but he was this kind of legendary show promoter. Great
okay.
singer. Didn't maybe played a little bit of guitar, but was not a big time musician. Famously is the one that brought the Monroe Brothers down from Kentucky for their first engagement on WBT Charlotte, Crazy Water Crystal Show, which is what brought the Monroes and Byron Parker to WFBC in Greenville. Then he got linked up with, J.E. Maynard's Southern Mountaineers, Fisher Henley's Aristocratic Pigs, all these Greenville area musicians. And on this, to kind of tie into the previous record and the Earl Scruggs influence, another guy that Earl Scruggs cited as a major influence for bluegrass banjo is Snuffy Jenkins, DeWitt Jenkins, who went by the name of Snuffy, who wasn't from South Carolina, but I think he's from... maybe the Shelby area too. I might be wrong there, but proto bluegrass banjo, actually on this record is playing, Fisher Henley's previously was the owner of this banjo, which then Snuffy Jenkins sold to a young girl Scruggs. So it's that banjo I was telling you all about that has only been owned by three people and families still in the Scruggs family. And all three are just insanely influential.
Yeah.
But, you know, this wasn't recorded at WFBC on a Saturday night or anything, but could have been. This is what any given hillbilly program would from that time like. Period, including right down to the personnel playing on it. Like, these guys were definitely in and around Greenville a lot during the time this recording was made.
I took a notion a few years ago that I'd start out in life. First thing I thought I'd have to have was me a pretty little wife. I had those lonesome lovesick blues. Oh, yeah. Went around the world on a honeymoon way down in Arkansas. When I got back to my old hometown, I met my mother-in-law. I had those disappointed blues. Oh, I started out to keep in house, started out goodwill. I got drunk and I lost my job, and I couldn't pay the grocery bill. I had those alcoholic blues. Then my wife got mad at me, so did my mother-in-law. The neighbors got so blustery, I thought I'd start it war. I had those henpecked husband blues. I can't quit. Then I got to laying out late, didn't come home till three. My wife was standing in the door with a rolling pin for me. I had those jigs and Maggie blues. Then she sued me for divorce and alimony too. I didn't have but 15 cents and I didn't know what to do. I had the separation blues.
Ho, 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 boy.
That's pretty cool. That fiddle lick was a popular lick in a lot of songs.
Chicken Reel.
Yeah.
That's its own tune, yeah.
And Roy Brown even used that in some of his old, tunes from like the 50s and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
that's a really popular fiddle melody called the Chicken Reel.
And people just used it wherever they.
And that's that fiddler also became a South Carolina standard kind of guy. I think he was also from Shelby or Rutherford County, but Homer Sherrill, which... Later, I mean, he's playing up through like the late, both of these guys, Pappy Sherrill and Snuffy Jenkins, lived in Columbia where they settled with Byron Parker on WIS. They were on TV and all kind of stuff, but we're playing all throughout the Southeast through like the early 90s.
Wow.
Snuffy Jenkins might have died in like 93, and then Pappy Sherrill, I feel like he was alive until a few years ago, maybe.
Wow.
But yeah, great kind of proto bluegrass. This is before Bill Monroe started calling it bluegrass.
Yeah.
But just perfect example of hillbilly music.
Yeah.
From the mid-30s.
You know, we were doing an episode on the 1800s, just on, you know, all the main influences that were coming in between Scots Irish and then enslaved people's music and then the music from, you know, that was coming from the English tradition of the piano tradition. And it's amazing to look at the Scots Irish tradition of music and how that became bluegrass with the advent of the banjo from Africa, you know, like how all those streams came together. Greenville is one of those places where the streams came together.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And more so than a lot of other places I can think of, because we're at the foothills. That's where the trail ends. You know, this is where a lot of just, you know, things kind of stirred together is what it seems like.
Yeah, it's cosmopolitan. Everybody's coming down here looking for a job.
Yeah. Well, that's a, you know, talking about the melding pot that when everybody came, so you sell the farm, maybe you have been that myth of like this lonesome fiddler who's been playing the same fiddle tunes his grandpap from old Scotland taught him or whatever. You know, there's it's not just a myth. There's tons of truth there too, but that kind of archetype. They didn't really start playing music like this until they were all had sold the farm, and now they're all living 12 feet away from each other in cotton mill houses.
Right.
Like that's this bigger picture, is that like the industrialized South, and for the most part, meaning textile mills, and how country music as we know it is kind of a product of mill hills. It's not, the, you know, the music had a life of its own in some lonely valley somewhere too.
Sure.
But you talk about, you know, mixing together and stewing, it really happened in, you know, all these little towns like Atlanta and Charlotte, Richmond, Virginia for sure, but on a smaller scale, Greenville, Spartanburg.
Because the proximity of the houses in a mill village was very close, and they all saw each other every day.
Yeah.
They drank together every night.
Right.
They did something for entertainment. Break out your fiddles, and everybody had,
you know, for sure,
like
roll up the rug.
Yeah, it's funny because the the Irish tradition was to, you know, continue your family's story. Jay Spivey was somebody I introduced that I interviewed for this, and he was great because he talked a little bit about how, you know, if you came over from Ireland, that journey would be baked into the lyrics of some of these family songs that he would sing. So they didn't necessarily, because there wasn't a lot of literate people.
Yeah, oral tradition.
You know, it was all oral tradition, but they carry the history in songs. So a lot of these things, that's why there's so much death.
Yeah.
You know, and all this other stuff. And this kind of dark wit, this dark humor to a lot of that and early music.
Domestic violence.
Domestic violence. Yeah. But then, but you see that. That's one of the real tangible strings that you can see from Scots Irish to country. Because that country and bluegrass stuff, the subject matter is still there, you know, especially the kind of dark sense of humor. But, you know, the idea that, and, you know, Bob Dylan did this when he, you know, did songs like Hurricane and other stuff where he told a story, you know, almost in that same kind of tradition. Not the same exact function, but close enough, you know.
Well, I had a friend of mine, I can't remember exactly who it was, but it was a long-form conversation at one of these fiddle convention camp-out festivals that still a big part of old time music. But they were saying, and I might kind of butcher this, that one of these kind of country music scholars has boiled it down to country was never country, but it's kind of metropolitan industrialized missing country. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Sure.
So many of these people singing about the farm and home, the old home place, the log cabin. They never lived in a log cabin.
Right.
They never milked a cow because they were at a cotton mill by 6 a.m.
Right.
Or a coal mine or wherever, you know.
So there's like a lamenting kind of baked
into
the
lamentation,
right,
which is, and that essence could also be applied to their great grandparents talking about being cleared out of the Highlands or whatever for being Catholic or Jacobites or something, you know, like,
right.
I mean, they all left Scotland and Ireland for a reason.
Right.
But, and so that longing, I think, extends to from cotton mill to farm and then maybe from farm to
old
the
country.
Old country.
The old country, right, sure. That makes total sense.
Now for those introductions I mentioned before. Here's Hunter.
My name is Hunter Holmes. Was born in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and raised in and around southern Spartanburg County in Lawrence, which is where I live now. And sixth generation traditional musician in my family. So listening to old time and bluegrass and country and rock and roll and blues, so I have this tendency to go backwards from the Rolling Stones to Muddy Waters, from Muddy Waters to Charlie Patton, or Bob Dylan to Woody Guthrie to Chris Bouchelon. And kind of obsessed with the history of any given thing that I'm into. And through playing music, I started looking for records. And like I said earlier, began to realize that we had our own musical legacy that nobody else seemed to be preserving at the time. So I'd started, you know, accumulating the material. And I love it. I still play music, still playing these records, and this research is kind of just incidentally just has to happen. But my main thing is playing and doing it myself.
And Jack Hines.
I'm Jack Hines. I'm a former musician and a local Greenville upstate music historian. And I do a little web. I'm building a web archive, and it's going to be called the Upstate Music Preservation Archive, just preserving the history and musical culture of upstate South Carolina.
I'd like to thank Jack Hines and Hunter Holmes, and of course the Metropolitan Arts Council, who helped make this possible. And we hope this is going to be a long-standing tradition on the podcast, to have this series that occasionally comes in where we have these collectors share their music with us. And if you have any ideas or leads for me to follow, or any people that you know who just are record hounds and love old recordings, especially if they are somehow to do with South Carolina or Greenville, please let me know about it. All the contact information is on our Facebook page, but just to let you know, our email address is GVLMHP, that's GVO for Greenville, MHP, Music History Project, @gmail.com. So GVLMHP @gmail.com. Thanks.